Hey there and welcome to Soul Church.
Our prayer is that this message encourages you wherever you may be in life.
You know, we've been hearing so many stories about what God is doing in people's lives, and we'd love to hear yours. So take a second and send your story to stories@soulchurch.com.
Thanks again for joining us today, and we hope that you enjoy the message. God bless.
We have got a panel of incredible experts, and I am not going to be the one giving wisdom tonight. My expert's going to be giving the wisdom. So I love it. You guys come on up, Rosie, Kev, and Jock. And really, tonight is about faith, hope, and love around the area of mental health. And I'm going to be asking those guys some questions about how we understand our brains. So, guys, come and grab a seat. I'm going to take a seat as well. And can we give them a round of applause, those in the room? Is that all right? And take a seat, everyone who's here. Well, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks.
Hello.
Thanks for the invite.
Oh, and these guys, you've come out the back of all of your work today. You are mental health experts. That is what you do, all different areas. You've worked all day, and now you've come to be with us tonight, completely just out of your goodness, your own heart. And we just want to say a massive thank you from behalf of Soul Church, Pastor John and Chantel. And I'm pretty certain that over the past few months, really the whole of 2020, it's been pretty full on for you guys, right?
Yes.
Just a little.
Incredibly busy.
Incredibly busy. Yeah. And this is something that is huge for so many people. And really, as a church, we've wanted to kind of tackle some of the things that we've been experiencing. What you guys have been experiencing is this increased rise in mental health. And so tonight, we're going to try and unpack that. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to help us unpack it. So I'm just going to ask the questions that you guys are asking. And really, it's probably going to be, it's 30 minutes we've got. And it's not going to be a long time, but we're going to try and do the best we can by talking about some of these real issues and really give some people some takeaways and some hope and be a beacon of light in a pretty crazy time. So I don't know, would one of you guys like to, well, let me introduce you guys. Is that all right? And so we've got Jock Downey. And Jock, you are the assistant head of well-being student services at UEA. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
That's it. Yep. That's a bit of a mouthful of a title.
A bit of a mouthful, but you've got it.
And how, can I give you a little bit of experience? How long have you been in kind of this area?
I've worked in mental health and supporting people for maybe 20 years.
20 years,
so
wow.
Started volunteering when I was fairly young, working with different groups, and it's led me to this career that
you don't look old enough to have 20 years of experience,
Thank
Jock.
You very much.
So you're doing very well. And Kev, you are known as King Kev around these parts, or Big Kev. So we've seen you a few times, but for those who are just tuning in first time, who are you? What do you do? How do we know you?
So you know me because I've been in church for 3 years now, and I work as a peer consultant in NHS mental health services here in Norfolk and Waveney. Yeah. And work as a mental health ambassador nationally with organisations like the Centre for Mental Health, Rethink Mental Illness, and the Royal Colleges of Nursing and Psychiatry.
Come on, and you are an expert by experience.
Expert by experience. So I, as a peer consultant, it's a combination of someone with lived experience of using mental health services alongside my learned and professional experience.
So we might unpack that a little bit later. And Rosie, what is your experience? Who are you? Where are you from?
So I'm a youth counsellor, which is ages 11 to 18 at the moment. I was with the littler ones, but I've just changed jobs. So I'm working at MAP, which is CAMS. So a few years experience. And
That's it. So we've literally, between you guys, we've kind of got the whole breadth. I know mental health is a huge thing, but we've really kind of got a bit of every age. And I think it'd be great, just for those who are watching at home, can we just kind of put some definitions together? What is mental health? Who can experience it? And why now is it such a big issue? It's in the news all the time. It's in the media all the time. Social media is full of it. So take it away. What is mental health? Who wants to jump in?
Go on, Kev.
Well, I guess the first thing to say is if you've got a brain, you've got mental health, as in you've got a physical body, so you've got physical health.
Yeah.
So it's very much about, you know, at periods in your life, you may experience poor mental health and good mental health.
Yeah.
In respect of why is it seem to be more prevalent, I'm not so sure that it is. I think that there's just more media coverage and a lot more focus from the Royals and others to have open meaningful conversations about the benefit of not feeling stigmatized and having conversations about your mental health and good mental health.
Because, Jock, you might be able to answer this. You're focused at universities.
Yeah.
Mental health for higher education systems, is that something new? Has that been have you seen an increase in it? Is your role always existed?
Yeah, it's been there for a long time. I think there's been more focus in more recent years, especially UBA has gone through a phase where we've injected loads of money into mental health to support students. And that's kind of born out of students arriving at university wanting to talk about mental health, wanting support for that, and having an expectation that that's what the university will do. Yeah. So I feel really lucky to be part of that and kind of see the growth of that. I've worked in education for about 15 years, so I've been aware of this kind of building up of people that need support from us and are looking for that.
Incredible. That's awesome. And I think really, so we've kind of got the basis of what mental health is. Everyone can experience it. It's something that pretty much all of us, if we've got a brain, will have at some point in mental health. Can you give me some light on, do they have a stat on how many people experience mental health? Is it something that's a very small percentage? Is it actually most of us who experience it for our lives?
Well, I was going to say, I think it's about one in three is some stats you see around there.
It's a huge,
I think everyone, as you rightly said, if you've got a brain, you experience mental health.
Yeah.
So there's going to be times when actually you just have a bad day.
Yeah.
So what do you do to look after yourself in that moment? Yeah. Well, if you're going through a good period of mental health, but you've had a bad day, you might do something to treat yourself.
Yeah.
Like you might veg out in front of the TV and just relax for a little bit, or you might go and see some friends and do something that's good. When you're in a period of having bad mental health, actually it's really hard to do those things and look after yourself.
Yeah.
So that's part of the message that I think needs to get out there, is talking to people about what is it the things that you're trying to do to yourself to look after you.
Well, I think that really leads well on kind of the next area I want to talk about is during lockdown, we spent a lot of time either by ourselves or in our family groups or in our bubbles or however that looks. And really, one of the questions I want to ask, and I think a lot of people are asking, is what sort of signs in ourselves, in our friends, in our family, do we need to look out for that could mean that either we're struggling with our mental health or those around us are struggling with our mental health? Because I think that's something that maybe we don't necessarily recognise as natural. I don't know, Rose, have you got...
I think, you know, it can be your friends or your family, they've had a change in their personality. So if it's they're a lot more quieter, or if they were a quiet person and they've suddenly got bursts of confidence, anything that seems a little strange, or you can be sleeping more, sleeping less. I think in lockdown, everyone seems to have lost their routine. They haven't, you know, if they're not working or they can't go to university, everything's changed so much that you can have a lie-in, you can stay in bed all day, you don't have to get up and get dressed. So I think if you're sensing this in your friends, then that's when you need to like speak to them and say, you know, come on, get up. And I think...
Because it seems something like so small initially, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like having an extra half an hour in bed.
Pyjama day.
Yeah, but a pyjama day, and then it goes to pyjama week.
Yeah.
Pyjama month.
I need to bathe.
Yeah, and then, but really it's those small little things, because I think one of the things that we all know, with any issue of our in our lives, it never starts in the big. It's the small things. And something as simple as just slipping on the routine, not having to commute, just being able to sit in front of a computer all day, that can be something that maybe instigates. Kevin, if you want to add something.
It's important that we talk about mental health, we talk about mental wealth. So in the same way that you know, by looking after your physical health, you eat nutritious, well-balanced diets, you exercise, you eat, you drink plenty of water, you do things to you know, keep up your interests, hobbies, that kind of stuff. It's the same thing with your mental wealth. You need to be doing things that improve your mood. So the diet, the exercise, the drinking plenty of fluids is just as important, but so is it as doing things like Sudoku or things that kind of you know, mental kind of gymnastics.
Get your brain going.
Is really important. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, Jock, really, I've got a question for you, kind of leading on to that. We can be aware of our friends and our family that are close by, but you work with young people that often have uprooted from home.
Yeah.
And so you must get contact by parents, right? Who are saying, I am concerned about little Johnny.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, and so how can we look after people who are not necessarily with it? I think that's something that can really help us in isolation when we're not necessarily seeing our friends in the same way. Is there a way of supporting others when you're in isolation?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I think kind of reaching out to people, reaching out to your friends and family, having those conversations, whether it's on Zoom or whatever network you can use, can and try and be there for someone. Yeah. And actually, I think one of the things that we talk about a lot is mental health, and I think as a society we've got better at talking about that the past 10, 15 years. And maybe actually we need to move that conversation on a little bit to how we respond to people when they want to talk to us. And one of the things that I go on about a lot is listening.
Yeah.
And I think that's so vitally important for really hearing what's being said by someone that we're concerned about. So whether that's a friend or a family member, we have the conversation and it's time to sit back and really try and hear what they've got to say. And in those moments, that's when someone might be able to have a second where, because you're truly listening, they can find the courage to speak out about what they need to.
Yeah.
And in those moments being heard, so you're not thinking about the next thing that you want to say in that conversation or relate to that particular story, giving space and gaps and being okay with silence is just an amazing thing to be able to do for someone. So that's kind of what, when I speak to parents, that's what I talk about. Because often the first question is, well, how do I help my son or daughter? They're not really talking to me. I don't know what it is. So I talk about listening. I talk about sitting in silence and it being okay and being acceptable.
And that is actually something pretty incredible in today's world. Like, we don't sit in silence.
The long pauses are really important, you know, just as important as asking open sort of ended questions that can't be answered with a kind of a yes or no, because you want to get a sense from the person about what they're experiencing at the time and what they're going through. And I think, you know, it's really important that we know now that, you know, through COVID, some of the statistics that are coming out that there's a 30% increase in the last 8 months of people approaching mental health services, wow, looking for a short or long-term intervention. Mind UK carried out, some research. And in June and July of this year, there was an unprecedented amount of people that approached acute and crisis mental health services than ever before.
Wow.
So, you know, some of the numbers that are being bandied about is that an increase in 500,000 more people approaching mental health services as a result of COVID that may not have approached mental health services before, because we are used to being independent people in a working environment, experiencing community with our workmates and friends, and having that taken away and being restricted, and you're at home with young kids as well. All of those things can be real stressors.
Yeah.
I think that it's the time that we've sat still and then the issues come up that are okay. I think people pack their lives with stuff to try and, like, deal with it, because if they're busy with their friends, they don't have to deal with the fact that they've got anxiety or depression. And by just sitting still, they are coming out, and people are struggling with being at home anyway, but they've got to that point where they've had to sit still and be like, oh, okay, and are reaching for help now.
Wow.
And I think, as a counsellor, my main role is just to listen. I think people panic. They say, oh, well, what can I do? Like, oh, okay, but this is okay. You know, you've got a good family. Like, why would you feel like that? When actually, you just need to validate their feelings and go, yeah, that sounds really hard, because it is for them. And just listening, just listen to them.
Yeah, mental illness doesn't discriminate.
Yeah.
You know, I've had people say to me, well, what have you got to be depressed about? You've got a nice house, a nice car. You've got friends around you. You've got community. What's the matter with you? And it's that kind of conversation that you need to have that educates people that you're not choosing to feel that way in that moment. And the experience, you know, depression and anxiety are real. And for people experiencing depression, it can be like wading through treacle. Everything that you do, that you would do normally, whether it's even getting up and taking a shower or preparing a meal, everything becomes so much more labour-intensive, whether it's psychologically or physically.
But something like listening, as simple as listening, can really alleviate that for the individuals going through it, or actually just the whole community, the whole friendship group, the whole family. Rosie, you work with young people, and I've got a bit of experience working with young people, doing the youth stuff, and they don't often speak. So I'm imagining that in a lot of your counselling sessions, there can just be a lot of silence. And a lot of parents, I know I spoke to parents as well, probably some jock, who have struggled with, they don't know if a young person's okay. So when you're talking about this stuff, are you just sitting in silence for session after session, or do you find they break eventually?
They break eventually. Yeah. So talk to them like a normal human being and get to know them, and that's how you'll probably get people come to you and spill it out to you because they're comfortable with you. Yeah. And I think a lot of the time they'll take it home, and that's when parents go, they're an angel when we're out. And then when we get home, it comes out as anger, and they don't understand that. You're like, why is my child so angry? And it can come out that way. Yeah. So I think a lot of the time they sit there, I'm fine. And actually, they might just need some help for when they're not fine, and give them steps of, okay, when you're angry, this is what you can do, and talk about that in that sense.
Yeah, and what if someone's watching right now, and we've got people from all over the world be watching, and they experiencing something, they don't feel 100% themselves, they want to talk about it, but they're nervous. What would you say to them? Is you the guys who, Kev, I know you've got lived experience of it, but as you often are the people that people open up to, what could you say to some of those fears, some of those anxieties that they're experiencing on why they don't want to talk to friends, family?
First thing I'd say, it's okay not to feel okay. Yeah. It is really important. It's really important as a friend, as a family member, that you listen, that you validate, that you don't try and find solutions to people's problems and bombard people with questions is not what you need from someone who's trying to, you know, that you need support with. Encourage people to go and see their GP. Also be mindful that, you know, some of the barriers might be that people will feel that they will be stigmatized, that their friends and family will see them differently somehow, or they might be labeled in some way. And it's been really supportive and helping people to make that. It might be something like Cooth, you know, as a digital platform for young people. It might be ringing a number that's, you know, but it's starting a conversation.
Yeah, because at the end of this conversation, we're going to put up some resources that people can use and go to from all different ages, pretty much everything, and there's so much more. These guys were sending me resources, and there is tons of stuff out there to help people. Mm-hmm. Rosie, I think you want to jump in and say something.
I think the biggest step is admitting, okay, I'm not feeling great. And I think if you're questioning it, do I need help, then speak to somebody.
And would you say, even if it was something where it could seem so minor, like I know at the start you guys were saying, if it was just having a pyjama day that's gone into pyjama week, and then you're not feeling great at the end of the week, even just talking about that, would you say that's okay? Like,
yeah, I think it can creep up on you, and that's probably the, when I went through my experience of struggling with my mental health, actually it was months before I realised, actually I'm not okay.
Yeah.
But actually believing that was really difficult. Like trusting that I wasn't okay, and having worked in mental health for a long time, it was strange to have to admit that to myself, that actually, okay, maybe all those things that I tell people on a regular basis, maybe it's time to have a look and start doing some of those things myself. So that was a really strange thing, and I look back over that time period and I realised actually it was months before really those first things started to occur to me that things weren't okay. Actually, to pick up on the point that you made as well about when young people talk to us, or a phrase I'm so used to hearing is, I'm really sorry I'm wasting your time with this.
Yeah.
There's people that are much more in need of that. And for me, nearly always those are the people that absolutely deserve help. And I think that's one of the things I want to make clear as well, is that you deserve, like if you feel that way, you absolutely deserve help. You absolutely deserve the support that's out there. That's why we're here, and that's why there's so much out there, because we want to get to people, we want to give them that support.
Yeah, I think so much work has gone into changing the narrative of mental health, that, you know, that it was seen as a weakness, as a deficit, as something to be ashamed of. Nobody's going to want to know me, that kind of stuff. I think a lot, and it goes back to the, you know, why is it on the increase? And again, I'm not so sure that it is. I think it's just more open conversations about it has allowed people to feel more freedom about being honest about their emotions and their feelings, and
And this isn't something that just affects young people. I know I've spoken about students and kids, but this affects the older generation too. And I think there's a conversation we had that was actually saying that some of the elderly, some of the retired people have experienced just the same mental health as well. I don't know. Yeah.
The level of social isolation and loneliness has increased significantly. I think the statistics are that feeling lonely is the equivalent to smoking a pack of 20 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
That's the impact,
on your health
that it has on your body, your health. And people are significantly more isolated and lonely because of COVID. So, you know, it's about how can we wrap our arms virtually around people as, you know, the NHS or the UEA or whatever it is that we do and support people in their time of need.
Yeah.
And actually one of the barriers to reaching people in mental health for many years was a conversation about the use of technology, and but actually through COVID that's moved that whole kind of that barrier has disappeared because there are so many more.
Let's not use technology because technology is bad for mental health. Now we're in a point where we can only use technology. So let's get on technology.
Not necessarily whether it's bad, but whether it was safe.
Okay.
So you know, but COVID has kind of addressed that now
because
so much more has appeared online.
Yeah.
I think going back to the sort of older generation, I think due to when they're growing up, it, like mental health, you couldn't really go to your GP as openly as you can now. You couldn't go to speak to your school or university, and it's been squashed for so long, and then it's presenting as they're getting older and older. So previously I worked with a man in his 80s who'd suffered with depression all his life.
Wow.
And had come in his
80s. His 80s, sort of, and this is the first time he got the help.
Yeah.
So even though there are people watching, they're like, I've been fine my whole life, but I've always felt like this. Actually still get the help. The help's there, you go and get it. Really, that really kind of leads me on to another really important question about people in crisis. Now, we've kind of spoke about minor mental health, and I don't know if any mental health is minor. I don't know if you could even say that, but some people, we see it, people get to crisis stages, and maybe there's someone watching who is in a crisis. And as a church, often for many of the group leaders that are watching tonight and people within the church, people can come to them in a crisis and it can feel a little bit scary. What do I do? Maybe it's a loved one, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a complete stranger. Maybe someone picks up the phone just because they know you're the friendly churchgoer down the road and they call you because they're in a crisis. What do we do? How do we help? If someone informs us that they're suicidal, that's a huge thing. That can be a big pressure for someone.
I think as a group leader, if someone contacts you via WhatsApp, you know, in a Zoom group, texts you, emails you, and they're reaching out, the first thing I'd say is be mindful that, that person trusts you in that moment, which is why they're reaching out to you, and they're trying to hold on to hope in that moment of feeling potentially suicidal. If someone does reach out to you in that way, then the first thing to do is try and contact that person back and have a conversation and open some open questions about, you know, how are you feeling? Have you taken an overdose? Are you thinking of harming yourself? Do you have a plan in place for ending or taking your life? And if that person is in immediate danger, then the very next phone call is to the police to call them. And don't think that the police aren't able to respond, because our police stations, our call centres within the police stations have mental health professionals embedded within those teams now. You've got some of the links and some of the numbers that are going to be coming up later. So the first response number, encourage people to ring that if they're not in a moment of where they feel suicidal but they're struggling with their mental health. Or that person may feel overwhelmed and may want you to ring that number on their behalf. Yeah. But if you're in that moment,
in that crisis,
yeah,
just get the help you need.
Just get the help you need.
Take them on that journey, but go to the professionals, call 999. Yeah, Rosie.
And don't panic. Try not to panic. Stay calm.
Yeah.
I think the fact that they have come to you is a massive thing and such a massive step of, I want some help. Definitely.
Yeah. And I go back to listening as well with that.
Yeah.
Like even if it's, we kind of said a small thing, and maybe it's comparable to having a cold, to having a heart attack. Actually, listening works in both circumstances. So the follow-up action is really important.
Yeah.
But actually, just in that moment when someone's telling you something, to be there with them completely can just be such an amazing thing for that person. And that might be the thing that eventually gets them to accept help from the next person, whether that's the GP, whether it's the phone line that they call as well. So there's all those little steps. If you're one of the first people in that step,
yeah,
that's a really incredible opportunity that you've got.
And I feel like actually something that's coming out of tonight already that I'm seeing is the power of listening. And I know we're in this series called Faith, Hope, Love, but actually there's so much love, there's so much hope in just being a listening ear to someone and saying and being prepared to be that person, which is absolutely incredible.
And the importance of validating the situation that person's in, you know, because it's really important that you don't try and act as a mental health professional, as a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a mental health nurse, and try and, again, like I say, come up with solutions.
Yeah.
You know, just assess the situation as best you can, and then just reach out by the contacts that we've given you, and then contact one of our senior leaders in church. Would be a good thing to do as well.
Yeah, definitely. Build the community. Have people that can listen and go on that journey with them. Well, that's a really incredible answer. And I think that's a hope-filled answer as well. And that's what I loved about that, is that actually you guys are saying there is still hope, that if you're in that situation, it's okay to be in that situation, but you're not going to stay in that situation because you can get help and we can get you through that. That kind of then leads on to one of the big conversations that I hear people talk about, and one of the things that many people have wondered is, what does the journey look like to improve someone's mental health? Is there a set path that people go on? Like, same if I said I want to get fit, I've then got to start eating right, I've got to start going to the gym. Is that the same for mental health? Does it look different for everyone? What are some of the things that people can experience? Because that's also another scary thing. If they go, oh, I'm now saying to someone, I'm going to speak to someone tonight, I'm going to go online, I'm going to call the numbers, I'm going to open up to my group lead, I'm going to open up to someone in the church. But what does that journey look like? So
I think what I'd say is that we're all individuals.
Yeah.
So what may work for one person may not work for another.
Yeah.
So there isn't a one-size-fits-all response to a person and their mental health. Some people might respond well to medication. Some people might respond well to some therapy or some counselling. And some people may respond really well to more of a kind of recovery-focused model of, you know, where you live is just as important as how you live. Having something genuine and purposeful that gives you a sense of identity in life is really important. You know, community, friends, that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
I think my role is just be there for them, listen to them, work through their feelings, emotions, anxieties.
Yeah.
And then give them practical advice of the staying active, getting up, making bed, get washed.
Yeah.
Drink water.
Even saying somebody's drinking water, just committed to drinking, how much is it? 2 litres a day.
2 litres a day.
Can make someone feel mentally better. So that's the same practical. If someone's in that situation right now, you say just start trying to drink a bit more water.
Yeah.
Start trying to make your bed in the morning.
It's a small achievement, I think, isn't it, as well? Yeah. It's just kind of going, actually, if you've been struggling to get up throughout this recent lockdown, if you've been struggling throughout the whole pandemic, getting up and getting a shower could be a huge achievement, and it feels really small, but to recognise that that's a huge step for you is a really incredible thing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I think what I'd say is, it's not, you know, your journey through services, if that is what happens, you know, you're not defined by that. I think that's really important, you know. So it might be that you'll go to your GP. Your GP might refer you for a mental health assessment. You might have a mental health assessment. Some of the recommendations might be that you're referred to then a community mental health team. Some people may need a short stay on an inpatient ward or one of our crisis wards within the NHS. And some people may not. So, you know, just be open and mindful about that.
Yeah, I think I've been really lucky in my career to meet just hundreds of really, really amazing people who have got through stuff that's been, you know, when I sit and listen to what they've been through, and God, it really affects me, and I'm trying to work out how I would ever get past some of that. And then to work with people to the point of recovery is something I feel really honoured to do, and I'm really happy that this part of life has opened up for me. Because I've seen people confront the some of the most horrible things, but get through it.
Yeah.
And yeah, sometimes that path is really long, and sometimes there's dips, and there's moments of real elation and joy, and they think they've got past it, and then they dip again. But actually accepting that's okay, and it's just a journey, and exactly what you said, it doesn't define us.
No, you may be given a diagnosis, but you're not defined by that diagnosis. And, you know, people are always doing better than they think they are.
Yeah.
Because you are always your worst...
That's a bit of a catchphrase around
here,
isn't it?
Yeah, but you're always your worst critic. You're always giving yourself a hard time. It's really good to set achievable goals.
Yeah.
So it might be getting up, getting a shower, getting a meal, not writing down as achievable goals, I'm going to run a 5K jog around Eaton Park
every day this week.
And then when you don't do that, then you beat yourself up because you failed, and that's how you see it. So it's about setting really achievable goals with people.
Yeah. Rose, you got anything you want to add? You actually said something to me the other day. We were talking about this, and you said a step in the right direction is recovery. He says just one step.
Yeah, I think, you can have these issues for years and years, but as long as you're keeping and going and you're trying, you're in the right direction.
Keep moving forward bit by bit.
Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely incredible. And I think finally we've kind of come to the end. But obviously we're speaking from a church community. And I think, smoking 20 cigarettes a day is the same as loneliness. And really... I would love you all to kind of share a little bit. What does the role of community play on mental health? How does community, having that relationship with other people, how does that help?
So I think, I'm in a girls group at church, and if I wake up and I'm feeling rubbish, I will put in the group chat, I am feeling rubbish, please can you all pray for me? Yeah. And they're like, we're praying, they're checking up on me,
And you're like a mental health expert, and you recognise that actually sometimes I just need to message my group.
Yeah, I feel
let
anxious
them know.
Too. And I think by having that girls group, it's so helpful, especially in this time where we're not meeting at church every week, we're not meeting for coffee, we're not allowed to. So by having that community, it's just been saving grace in this time.
That's incredible. Thanks, Rosie.
Yeah, the power of community is massive when we're talking about how it impacts positively on a person's mental health and well-being. And a sense of community is massive. So, people with mental health problems tend to withdraw from friends, family. They become more aloof, more difficult to contact. And that could be for all sorts of really plausible reasons. But, the social isolation and the loneliness will only serve to compound that problem with your mental health. So, for me, the power of community through, we've got a WhatsApp group, we've got a Zoom group, being able to connect with people is really important because, feeling part of it, it gives you a sense of belonging, you belong and that you're important and that you're loved, and that's really important because what we all need in life is somewhere to live, someone to love, something to do, and a little bit of disposable cash to do it with is helpful.
The Chinese and the Friday night, Kev. That's what it's all about.
Or season tickets.
Or a season ticket at Norwich City. Come on, Jock, I don't want to add to the end.
Exactly what you said, community is so important, and I think actually what we've all experienced this year is having to redefine what we mean by community.
Yeah.
It was meeting your neighbours, it was being out in the street, it was sitting in a cafe.
Yeah.
It was talking to people, and actually now we're having to change everything about that, and it's odd, it's come into our homes, it's on a screen in front of us.
Yeah.
And we've got to redefine it, we've got to figure out what that means, first of all to us, how we engage in it, and how we connect with people again. How difficult it is to sit and really listen to the other person on the screen, instead of looking around, what else is going on? I'm terrible for looking at the picture of me in the corner.
Check my
or
hair.
Watching where my cat is going around the place.
Yeah.
All
of that.
Yeah.
Finding connections, finding a way to reconnect with people is absolutely important at this point.
Guys, that is absolutely incredible, and you've given us some real takeaways. Listening, help us remove some of the stigma around mental health. Saying people need to get help. Actually, tonight, just do it. Maybe message your group leader, message your friend, message your partner, whatever it is. Maybe message one of the team that are there helping in the chats, saying, hey, I'd love to speak to someone and start that journey. And I think the other thing was how to help someone in a crisis. And that's something that plays on a lot of people's minds. They don't know what to do. We feel completely unable to deal with people with crisis. And actually, what you guys have brought tonight has been incredible. So thank you so much. And hey, let's give these guys some applause and thanks, because what they've done is they've just come out of their own backs to be here tonight after a long day, I'm sure, of work. And give us some love in the chat, because I know you guys are. But can we just give a round of applause for those few of you that are in the room? And thank you, guys. And I'll let you guys head off that way if you'd like. And really, we just want to say that if you've been affected by some of the conversation that we had tonight, I'm aware that this is something that so many of us experience, whatever stage of life you're in. And as a church, we want to say, hey, we're with you, we're standing with you, we don't need to do this alone. And we also know that there is a God who loves you, who knows you, and you know he's bigger than everything you're going to face. And right now, actually, the team have prepared a song, a worship song, a place where you can reflect. And it's never about being alone. It's about a reminder that God is with you no matter what you're facing. And after that, I'm just going to come back and I want to pray for some people and just share a bit of faith, a bit of encouragement, because we've done the practical and then we're going to pass it over to God. Is that all right, guys? So, hey, maybe you want to stand, maybe you want to worship, but let's just take a moment to reflect. Guys, I love that song. God is with you. I wonder right now if you're feeling alone. I wonder if tonight you needed this because you needed a bit of hope for your situation. The Bible talks a lot about that feeling of fear, despair, that feeling of just feeling out of your depth. There's this incredible verse, and Jesus says it himself. It's in John verses 16, verses 33. It says, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. You know, tonight was a really, really practical session. But underlying all of it is the truth of who God is and the fact that in him we can find peace. Jesus said, he said, we're going to have troubles in this world. We're going to have good days, we're going to have bad days. We're going to have highs, we're going to have lows. But take heart, I've overcome the world. And I don't know where you're at right now. I don't know what you're experiencing, but I want you to know that there is hope for tomorrow. Why? Because Jesus said so. Jesus said so. There's another scripture that says that I've not given you the mind of fear, but I've given you a sound mind, for the power and love. And I really love to pray for you right now that you'd have a fresh revelation of who God is. Is that okay? So I don't know, wherever you're at, maybe you want to put your hand on your heart and just, if that's for you right now, if there's something that you needed to hear tonight, maybe you need to actually finish this chapel, maybe just send a message to someone. Maybe it's to your group leader, maybe it's to a friend, maybe a loved one, a family member. Maybe it's to go to some of the resources that we've put up. So the websites, maybe call someone, maybe to speak to a parent. I don't know what it is, but you do. And I just want to pray that you have the fresh courage to go out and start this new journey. So Father, right now, we just thank you for every single person watching, whatever situation they find themselves in. God, we thank you that in you we find peace. In you we can overcome the world. So we pray right now for every single person that's going to make a really bold and courageous step in the next few hours, they're going to start getting the help they need. They're going to start speaking about it. We pray for every single person that's going to listen with new ears this week. They're going to be the listeners that you need to be. We thank you that we can find hope in you. In Jesus' name. Amen, amen. Hey, once again, can we just thank our panelists, because these guys have been preparing for days, honestly. I spoke to them about it a few weeks ago and they've been absolutely preparing. And hey, you're never alone. That's the other thing I want you to know. Like, if something's really stirred you, maybe there's something that you've recognized in yourself tonight, hey, please, please let us know. We'd love to help you. We can put you in contact with the right people. You're not on your own for this. And hey, it's the start of a new conversation we're having in Soul Church, so we're super excited.
Thanks again for tuning in. And if you said the salvation prayer today, we'd love for you to email connecttofaith@soulchurch.com so we can talk to you a little bit more about this incredible decision that you've just made.
Yeah, you know, and if at any point in the service you felt moved to give towards any of our local or global initiatives, then head to soulchurch.com and click on the giving at the top of the page.
Thanks again for joining us today, and we hope to see you again soon. God bless.